Thanks for tuning in to The Real Deal Show, brought to you by ebodyboarding.com and Tribe Boards.
How's it going, everybody? Jay Real here on location in Costa Rica with the Bodyboard Holidays crew. And one of that crew is a man from the United Kingdom who has a deep and long history in the sport of bodyboarding over there. Welcome, Colin Crowther.
Welcome, Jay.
Shake your hand. Yeah. Thanks. Glad to be here. We're in paradise here, right?
Oh, it's beautiful. So hot, sunny, lovely.
I know, man. It's about midday right now. We're recording this at the Funky Monkey Lodge, where the Bodyboard Holidays crew stays on their trip here in Costa Rica. And if you ever want to get on this trip, by the way, the link is in the description below to Bodyboard Holidays. You can sign up for the trip and get on board this thing. Vicky and I had so much fun. We're here for the full 2 weeks this year with this crew, and moving on to El Salvador from here. We just can't get enough of Central America in January because it's so nice. Unlike where you're from. So let's talk about that. Where are you from, Colin?
Right, I'm from a very small island called Jersey, which is... it's about 12 miles off the coast of France and about 120 miles south of England in the UK. It's pretty cold there at the moment in the winter. Sea degrees about 8, 9 degrees C at the moment, with gales and wind and rain.
Wow. So 8 to 9 Celsius, by the way, is right around the mid-40s Fahrenheit. Freezing cold water. But you're no stranger to freezing cold water. We're going to get into some of your more recent forays into the Arctic. You told me some stories the other day. We'll get to those in a bit. But let's go way back, Colin. How old are you now?
I was 54 earlier this week.
Well, so you celebrated a birthday here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, happy
yeah.
birthday. I didn't even know that. Happy belated birthday.
Thanks.
54, he's a Gromman in my book, of course. But it is... January 2024. So with that in mind, how did you get into the sport of bodyboarding? I mean, Jersey isn't the first place most people think of when they think of bodyboarding, unless they're from the UK. They know there's surf there. Jersey and Guernsey, the two biggest channel islands there, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jersey's, despite being a very small island, has actually got a huge surfing history. It's had surf clubs going back to 1923.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got one of my friend's grandfather, he saw surfing in Hawaii, and he came back and set up a club. So it's got a really long history. Myself, loads of people I was with at school, they were all talking about surf and following the tides. And I just, when I left school, I hired boards and started. I originally started on the big boards at first, and then...
like a longboard or a surfboard?
No, on boogie boards. Boards. And then I, after watching some video, a video called Crystal Voyager with a Californian surfer, George Greeno,
yeah, from Santa Barbara.
I then transitioned to riding knee boards for a while. So I rode knee boards for about a year or two. And then I kind of had a bit of an accident.
Yeah, so let's share with the viewers and the listeners what that accident was. Yeah. Pretty horrendous.
Well, I spent the afternoon at the beach as usual, and the battery on the car was flat with me and my friends, so we pushed it out onto the main road to try and see if we can get it started, and another car drove into the back where I was pushing, and I kind of ended up with 8 brakes below the knees.
Oh my God.
And a few little scrapes here and there around my face.
Was there like a blind corner or something, and a car came ripping around the corner and slammed into you
and the
bumper? It was
the straightest road in Jersey. I don't know what happened. I expected a car to overtake.
Yeah.
And then there was a short skid.
Slammed you.
And I was flying through the air, and I landed behind both cars.
Oh my God. And what were the damages? Let's talk about the damage you sustained in that.
Well, I had bones go through the skin in both legs.
Wow.
I had a bone go through my calf muscle in my left leg. The calf muscle had to be removed. And then I kind of had to learn how to stand again. I couldn't flex my ankles enough to be able to stand up.
Oh my God.
So they used to wedge books under my heels. And then from there, I just gradually got myself fitter until, I was desperate to surf again. It took 9 months.
Yeah, that's a long recovery, but understandable given the nature of your injuries. But you told me the other day, you shared this story with me, and you mentioned a minute ago you were a knee boarder, but during your recovery something happened. What happened?
Yeah, during the recovery, lots of people very kindly gave me lots of magazines, and amongst them were a magazine called Bodyboarding. It's an American magazine, and with all the colorful pictures and the guys, and like Jay, Mike, Kisazaki, and it just looked so much fun. That while I was in my healing period, I brought myself a bodyboard ready for I could go back in the water. And then when I was first back in the water, as I mentioned to Jay, I would go down the beach with crutches, and someone would come down, they'll take the crutches off me, I'd go and get a few waves, and then I'll stand there waving my arms in the air, and they'll bring the crutches back down, and I'll be back up
That's
the beach.
Crazy, man. Now, you shared with me that one of the things you did during your recovery, you got a hold of those very first bodyboarding videos, how to bodyboard with the pros, which were, you know, we're talking mid-80s, I think, they came out, and they were in NTSC format. This is something young people won't understand. Formats of videos back in the day when they were on cassettes varied around the world. There was PAL, CCAM, NTSC. Depending on where you lived, they had different formats. So you got a hold of the NTSC copy of that video and did what with it?
Yeah, I seen an advert in Bodyboarding Magazine. I wrote away for a copy. The format, we can't use that format in Europe. So I sent it to a movie company, and it cost about four times more than the video to get it transferred to a format I could watch. And then after that, I just studied it over and over again, every single maneuver, slow motion, pause, rewind, until I had fuzzy lines across the video. And that was my sort of thing, really. It just got me so hooked on bodyboarding.
So that is really a good example of how we learned to bodyboard back in those days. Colin, being a few years younger than I, but back in those days, that was the only video, and there was no internet, right? So you would do that. You would get videos, and you'd slow-mo sections of it. You'd watch the arm placement, the hand placement, in the case of drop knee, the knee placement, to learn how to bodyboard, right? It took a long time to learn how to do stuff back then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but kind of joke, but my videos did have fuzzy lines across from the constant
from the
pauses and slow-mo and rewind.
Totally, man. So tell me about the waves in Jersey. Do you have a large variety of surf? First of all, how big is the island of Jersey?
Well, the island's only 9 miles long by 5 miles wide.
Okay.
And our west coast, which is 5 miles in length, faces directly towards Newfoundland.
Oh, wow.
So we've got the whole of the Atlantic Ocean directly out from us. So we pretty much pick up any swell in the Atlantic we'll generally get. Even sometimes there may be storms off the east coast of the US,
yep.
And they might even send us waves through like 10 days to 2 weeks later.
Wow. So those nor'easters, as we call them growing up on the east coast of the US, they will travel to the northeast and head your direction and send swell over there. But you have to deal with a lot of weather up in that part of the world too, right? In between swells?
Yeah, we've got two things really. One's the weather, but Jersey's also got the third largest tides in the world. So we have to deal with, we get big storms. In the autumn and winter, we get like really large storms. In the summer, we tend to get really small surf. But for a lot of surf spots, you need to have perfect tide, perfect wind, perfect size swell.
Of course.
So there's so many times we get two of them, but not the third.
Not the third.
So we always have to be on top of our game. I used to keep diaries, so I'm really good at knowing what tide to go to, what conditions.
Yeah.
I just got it locked in the head.
Well, you have to be a statistician and an amateur meteorologist to be a surfer or bodyboarder in Jersey, and I think most places it's like that. You know, a lot of people that ride waves on a daily basis, or it's their passion, they just by osmosis they learn those skills or those, you know, those things about the ocean. And it sounds like it's the same. So you talked about freezing cold. Obviously we're in the middle of winter in the northern hemisphere. Summertime, how warm does it get there in the water? What's the water temp in summer?
Again, I don't know the Fahrenheit. But but it goes up to about 19 degrees, maybe 19 and a half degrees.
That's about 68 Fahrenheit.
And, you know, on a hot day, well, occasionally get the shorts on.
Yeah, so I would not be in shorts in 18, 19 degree water, but that's me, I'm a wuss. But I could see how you guys would, and I assume, because you live in a place that's 9 miles by 5 miles, everyone knows each other in the water. Is that the case?
Yeah, very, very much. I would say, although it's only 5 mile long coast, there's various different groups and spots.
Okay.
So for instance, there's one spot called the Cutty Sark, which is only half a mile from where I surf most often. And I haven't surfed there since 1985.
Oh, wow. No
so
way.
So we have our localized spots, so there's various different localized crews in different places.
Okay. And which you don't have to say what your spot is. Is it like a secret spot? You're one of the crew at a certain spot regularly, would you say?
I grew up at the center of the surfing scene is the Water Splash. So that's generally the hangout spot. But when the tides reach different conditions, then I've got a few go-tos. There's some waves which are particularly good for bodyboarding. And then there's a few reefs that work now and again, which I might sliver away to.
Well, what's the ratio of bodyboarder to surfer in Jersey?
The island's got a very large surfing history. The ratio is very heavily weighted towards surfing.
Yeah, 100 years history, you mentioned back in the 1920s. So way more surfers than bodyboarders. I think that's the case at a lot of spots too. I wanted to ask you, you're entrenched in that whole scene there in the Channel Islands in Jersey. You've been very involved over the years with competition, both as a competitor and as a contest organizer. Let's talk about your competitive career, first of all. When did you start doing that?
I did my first bodyboard contest in 1986, where I got a third spot, and it was a competition called the Jersey Surfer Bout. And I did mention to Jay that around about that sort of time in the UK, we started to get overnight TV, 24-hour TV, and amongst the TV programs, they started showing the Professional Surfing Association of America tour contests, which were often held in waves similar to what I was surfing at home, in fact, often worse.
Yeah.
and I love the competition vibe. And then at that time, there was also a new crew of bodyboarders, the Kauai Classic team, who are really competitive, and I got amped for contest.
So those were your inspirations in those days. Do you have any like contest results that you're most proud of?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been successful at home, but my proudest result is I finished runner-up in the British Championships, the Open Division, in 1992.
Sorry.
And I've also had a few runner-ups in the over 28s and over 35s.
Okay. And are you still competing?
I've not traveled to compete for a while, but I've still been doing our local Channel Island Championships.
Okay. Right on. So now you were involved in organizing competitions. How did that start, and what are some of the major events you've been involved in?
Well, there was a little bit of self-interest at the beginning. In Europe, there's an event every 2 years held, the European Championships, which national teams compete at. And at the beginning, I wanted to make sure the selection process for the bodyboarder, because originally there was only one bodyboarder on the team, was fair. So I kind of got involved with the committee in that to make, you know, kind of get involved and help with the contest.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went from there, really. There were some guys and girls that had run the Jersey Surfball Club, which is actually the oldest continual running surf club in Europe. Excuse me. And they kind of stepped down, and me and a couple of friends, we kind of filled the gaps and went from there, really. And then over the years, I've got more involved in the European Surfing Federation. And I found myself being contest director for the Junior European Surfing Championships, which is shortboards and bodyboarding, which were held in Jersey in the year 2000.
Yeah.
Which We put in a bid to hold it because the European Championships actually started in Jersey. So we thought it would be good to have the first contest of the new millennium in Jersey. And then 9 years later, in 2009, I did the actual contest director for the main European Championships.
Jeez, man. That's some heavy stuff. I mean, those are important events. And obviously, you must do a good job to run them if they keep having you back to do more and more of that stuff. I mean, and that's on your free time. Do you get paid to do that?
No, it's all voluntary, but I have to stress, we've got a really good team of guys that all pull together.
Yeah. And mostly from Jersey or all around the UK?
Mostly Jersey.
Okay.
Mostly Jersey, but I have contacts in other countries. Excuse me again. I've got some contacts in other countries that maybe bring in scoring systems.
Yeah.
Or,
okay. Yeah. Now, how's the vibe, sort of touching on that, how's the vibe, surfer bodyboarder vibe in Jersey? Is there any issues over there? You know how sometimes at certain places that can be an issue. Anything where you live?
No issue at all. I think any vibe issues disappeared with the 80s.
Oh, good. Yeah. I love to hear that. One thing I want to back up because I forgot to ask you a question. You said you have the fourth biggest tides.
Yeah, the third biggest tide in the
third
world.
Third biggest tides in the world. Yeah. What are the tide fluctuations? How big?
Okay, so when we have our biggest spring tide during the year, we can have a 0 feet low tide and a 40-foot high tide.
40-foot tides? Are you kidding
me? So the tide, like on the southeast of the island, goes out best part of 2 miles.
Oh my god!
But we have something that one of my friends calls the Jersey Stare, where the tide goes out so far that we often have to spend hours waiting for the tide to come in so we can surf.
That's insane.
So we're just staring at the sea, waiting for it.
I would think you could get down there with shovels at a sand bottom beach break and like create these little triangular mounds of sand, and then when the tide comes in, you have an A-frame. Is that the case?
The main thing is like having the knowledge of what spots are going to work on the tides,
sure.
And then being there. Ideally, if you can be there before anyone else, so you can fill a lineup first, but just constantly being aware of what spot could work, when it could work, and what, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, I remember being in France many years ago in Lacanau, and there was a contest going on. The waves were really small, so they, at low tide, they brought bulldozers out and actually made little peaks in the sand, so that when the tide came in, there would be little A-frames, you know, this waist high. But that was interesting, like temporary, you know, reshaping of the shoreline, if you will. And they did it with bulldozers. This is back in the early 90s.
They did investigate a few years ago. We have like our west coast has pretty much got like an old, like from World War II, seawall that runs along the bay.
Yep.
And sometimes the sand disappears. And it was investigated about building groins to try and help build some sandbanks, which could have been really good for surfing. But when the study was undertaken, they said our tides were too big.
40-foot tides. In California, we get like a 7-foot tide, and everybody's, oh my gosh, it's a 7-foot high tide. 40 feet. Jeez, that's insane. Okay, so let's talk about your personal life as it relates to bodyboarding. Bodyboarding as a professional thing hasn't been in your life, as far as I can tell. In other words, you never just got paid to go bodyboarding. So talk about your life, like in terms of work and your personal life. How has that gone? Have you, out of high school, did you start working straight away? Did you go to university?
I actually, dare I say it, I left school at 15, literally just about 2 or 3 months after my 15th birthday.
Wow.
With no qualifications or anything.
And why did you do that?
I think I was bored.
Okay.
I was actually in the my top classes in every subject at school except one.
And so they weren't challenging you?
Not really, no. I think I was bored and I just left and I started working as a chef originally.
And how was your family with that? Your parents?
They were fine. They were fine, yeah. They kind of, like my dad, he was quite happy for me to work and get a job.
Okay. So you started as a chef.
Yeah, as a chef. My older brother works as a chef, so I just kind of followed him.
Okay. And did you do that for a long time? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did it for a little bit. And then my accident kind of changed my lifestyle, really, because I was in that sort of situation where I was almost wiped out in a split second. So my mindset became, how much do I need to think about the future when I could just be taken out just like that in a split second?
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, holding my hands up, I did kind of bomb around a little bit and do lots of little jobs. So I did a bit of chef work. I did things like putting fish on hooks for fishermen, a bit of painting and decorating with my dad. I grew oysters in an oyster farm. Just did a whole mixture of things to get by, just so I'd have enough money to go away to the next contest.
And then at some point you entered the corporate world more recently?
Yeah, when I reached my 30s, me and some friends in a similar situation to me, it kind of become a realization that we couldn't just have a laugh forever. Well, we still do have a laugh.
We have to get
a real job.
Right.
So me and a friend, we self-funded ourselves to do study for a finance qualification. And I found myself working in the world of offshore finance. Jersey as an island is basically an offshore finance center.
And you're a compliance officer, is that right?
Yeah, a compliance and money laundering reporting officer. So my role really is the fight against money laundering and financing and terrorism.
So you're kind of making sure that anyone who does banking in Jersey does it on the up and up, and everything's
we need to make sure that the money's clean.
Yeah, sure.
We're looking to make sure that it's like either the money's clean, not criminal money, no tax evasion, or no financing of terrorism, or things like that. Just, you know, a lot of the clients in Jersey will be multi-billionaires from all around the world. So it's just making sure that the money's clean.
Cool. Oh, noble profession. And what's your work schedule like? Are you a 9-to-5 office guy, or can you make your schedule?
I am a 9-to-5 office guy.
Yep.
And after 20 years working 9-to-5, it's still quite painful for me, because every October our clocks go back in Jersey and then we can only surf on the weekends.
Because it's dark when you get off work.
And it still bothers me today after 20 years.
Oh my gosh. What time is it light in the morning?
In the winter, it's pretty much light. It's light when you go to work and light when you come home.
Okay.
Dark when you go to work and dark when you come home.
Oh my gosh, that's brutal, man. That's tough.
But in the summer, it's light until about 10:30 in the evening.
Well, so that brings us to the next part of this conversation, which is you take advantage of your, you know, building up leave, I guess, so you can do stuff like this. And you've been on a few of these trips as well, right? I mean, we surfed together in El Salvador a number of years ago on one of Rob's trips, but you do a lot of surf travel, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of, I've done a lot of travel, predominantly around Europe.
Yep.
Yep. And as Jay knows, predominantly to cold places.
Yeah, so how does that work? What is it, just because you're trying to avoid crowds, or you really like the raw, you know, nature of these freezing cold places?
Well, I think originally, I mean, Jersey's so close to France, all Jersey surfers go down France.
Okay.
But I did a European Championships in Scotland once, and the waves were incredible. But the bodyboard heats were held on a different wave, which wasn't incredible. And I always wanted to go back. And 10 years later, I thought, I'll go up and have another look. And the surf was just mind-blowing. It was just absolute perfect reef break barrels.
Wow.
And I never went south. Well, I have had a couple of south trips, but I generally stopped going south afterwards and started going Scotland. And I've probably been up there about 20, 30 times. And then my eye then caught attention to other places like the Outer Hebrides and Orkney Islands and other coasts of the UK, which may be a little bit more secret.
Yes.
And just trying to get away from people, really.
So this is the guided message if you want to know all the maps to the secret spots. No, those island groups, if you look at the map of the North Atlantic, there's a lot of little islands right off the coast of the UK that, I mean, they've got to just be packing epic surf. this guy's experienced it. I won't have him reveal his secrets, of course, but you told me you went up to some spot and was it in Norway? Way up in the coast of Norway?
Yeah, so for starters, when I got married in 2015 to Carol.
Yep, congrats, and by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
And whilst Carol was organizing everything, one day she said to me, you know, you need to do a bit more, you know, and maybe you should organize a honeymoon. And to me, it was a no-brainer. I wanted to go to North Norway because I'd seen a really good wave there about 20 years earlier in a magazine.
In a magazine. What was it? It was a girl posing on top of a mountain and you could see in the background.
It wasn't that one. That was a later one.
I'll
work to that. It was a left-hander below some big mountains. And then I used to go to the Canary Islands surfing regularly. And I met an elderly German couple on a trip to Tenerife once.
Okay.
And they told me about these islands in Norway, which is where this wave is. And they said it's the most beautiful place in the world. So I thought it'd be a perfect place to take Carol. But during my investigations into where we went for our honeymoon, my eyes then started being diverted to some other Scandinavian waves. First off in Iceland. So I headed off on a few surf trips to Iceland, to the north coast, which is pretty cold.
Yeah.
Sea temperature around about 3 degrees.
Oh my God, unbelievable.
And again, during research into those trips, I then, as I explained to Jay on Instagram, but I guess during the COVID period, travel was put on hold. And when things started to be released, where people would be able to start travel again, I just felt I wanted to do something different.
Yeah.
I'd had lots of trips to the same places. I always knew where I was going. I'd done trips like here with bodyboard holidays where you meet loads of people. But I liked the idea of trying to find somewhere I didn't know. And one day on Instagram, I saw a picture of a girl posing on top of a huge mountain somewhere in Norway. But way in the distance, I could see a little white triangle of white water. So I knew there was a wave.
This is called internet sleuthing. This is what you do.
So I sent a message and I just asked for the name of the mountain. And then once I had the name of the mountain, I was then able to open my search. I do a lot of searching for my job. And I did lots of, to say, sleuthing.
Yeah.
And then I found lots of other videos of other people similarly posing on top of the same mountain. And lots of them had the same little triangle of white water. So we went on a mission to go and find it. And it was 250 miles inside the Arctic Circle.
Wow. So you mentioned the water. You've been in water as cold as 2 or 3 degrees. That's, by the way, mid to upper 30s Fahrenheit. It's like, you know, salt water freezes at like 28 Fahrenheit. So not far from salt water freezing there. So it must have just been, was it brutally cold when you went? Or did you go at a time of year when it's generally warmer for that part of the world?
It was quite heavily snowy.
Oh my God. What time of year did you go?
We went to that one in late autumn, about November time. So it was deep into Norway's autumn. And like when we drove up, we had to drive over a mountain towards where I was heading. I had an hour's drive through snow to get to the way from where we based ourselves. And there was like, alongside the sides of the roads, there were like 15-foot icicles hanging everywhere, and it was quite dramatic. And I have to confess, when we were driving along fjords, the water was quite a grim colour and looked quite scary. And I even thought to myself, even when I find the wave, will I go in or not? Will it be safe, or will I be brave enough?
Yeah, because there'd be nobody else there.
Yeah,
right?
no one to help me. Unfortunately, Carol's doesn't swim greatly, and she's not going to dive into freezing cold water to come and rescue me.
And she doesn't like heat, which is why she's not here, by the way. You told me the other day.
Yeah.
So yes. She's in her element in the cold. But yeah, you're on your own, basically, in a place like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sensible. I like to think I'm sensible. And so for this place, we went down a track alongside a fjord, and it was deep water all the way, and then it opened out into this triangular reef, had a long left-hander, short right-hander, four big mountains behind me. But what I always do is I look at the landscape, I look at everything around me, I line up everything, and I tell my wife my exact plan. I tell her where I'm going in, where I'm coming out. I often give her emergency backup, where I'll say if I'm going to have difficulty coming in here, I'm going to come in there instead. So she knows that I've got a good idea what I'm going to do. Yeah. I risk assess it before I go in.
Yeah, which makes sense based on your career. But yeah, that's very pragmatic, I think, smart move on your part doing that. And what a crazy story, man. You just saw like this triangular thing of white water in a photo of a mountain with a girl on top of it, and that led you down that rabbit hole, so to speak, to find that spot. By the way, I'm going to put a link to Colin's Instagram in the description for those of you watching on YouTube, so you can kind of look. He has some pictures of himself covered from head to toe with neoprene at some of these destinations. And so that brings the question of all these places. You said you kind of gravitate more towards these more raw and cold places. What's your favorite surf trip that you've been on in your many years of bodyboarding?
Iceland. No doubt at all, Iceland.
Were you there before it became cool to go surf Iceland? Because now it seems like there's a whole surf industry there.
Yeah, I mean, the wave that I surfed in Iceland predominantly is well-named now. But when I traveled, it took me months and months of internet research to find it. Wow. Because of the search skills I use at work, I was searching like Swedish, Norwegian forums and pages and translating and doing all sorts to try and find where this wave is. I mean, Iceland's got a huge coastline and I had no idea where it was. And then somebody gave it a nickname. And it was enough to give me something to go on. And then someone else named it, but they didn't actually name it. They named another place not far from it.
Wow.
So then I knew I was in the right place. And using Google Earth, I could see a kink in the coastline that looked perfect for harboring a big right-hand point.
Wow.
So I've discovered where the wave was. But nowadays, it is quite well named. They do tours there as well.
Yeah.
But it's never going to be busy. I mean, Iceland's a big country and it's only got about 50 surfers, I was told.
Wow, no kidding. Wow, they're probably all employed in that industry now, showing people around.
Most surfs I've had there have been on my own.
Wow, that's so cool. So if we check your browser history on your work computer.
It's all lunch hours.
All on lunch hours, okay. I'm just checking, man, make sure it's all good. So what's next for Colin Crowther? Are you eyeballing retirement anytime in your near or distant future? And what do you want to do after?
Yeah, two and a half years ago, I became a granddad to my stepson's daughter.
Oh, nice.
And that kind of like, I start thinking now about, I have to be a bit more careful. Maybe take a few less risks sometimes, because I've got a different mindset.
Yep.
But we've been thinking about maybe leaving Jersey, or hopefully leaving Jersey, and moving to an area in the UK where there's some good surf, and then hopefully be able to kind of wind down the finance work I've been doing, spend more time surfing, and maybe have more time to get involved with helping with bodyboarding again, some more organizing. And then, it would be nice to hopefully one day take my granddaughter bodyboarding.
Right on, man. That's awesome, man. I mean, that's all anybody could ask for. And, you know, it sounds like you got a pretty good life set up. You have a solid job. You get to go on surf trips. You're, you know, discovering. I mean, essentially, you're still discovering spots, which is rare in this day and age, right?
I mean...
Not many people would do that. Most people go, I'm going to the tropics. I want to get out of this wetsuit. You're going, I'm going to go somewhere colder and put on more wetsuits.
Well, I mean, I was having a chat with somebody yesterday, and like back home, my friends would always say to me, why'd you go there? Why? It's so cold. It must be terrible. It must be really horrible. And how'd you cope with it? But being honest, I find coping with the heat is actually more draining and a harder work. Like my secret, I'll give away a secret. The secret to surfing in cold water is merino wool. So I come out to surf, I have merino wool socks, merino wool long johns, merino wool long sleeve base layer, wool jumper, down jacket. And I have to confess, with my job, I've gone from sleeping in cars when I was younger to now being able to afford a hire car with heated seats.
Yeah, heated seats.
And then I like to have like hot bowls of soup and and just get your whole body warmed up again.
Well, I always tell people, you know, heat versus cold. To me, cold is painful. Heat is uncomfortable. But heat to me is not painful, so I'll choose the heat any day of the week, man. I grew up in a place where the water's 4 degrees in the winter. That's about 38 degrees Fahrenheit. That's Maryland on the U.S. East Coast. I don't miss that. That's why I moved to California. But hats off to guys like yourself that, you know, still, you know, push for those northern limits. Maybe you'll end up, mapping out the entire North Sea and into the Arctic Ocean.
Well, I have got plans to go further north. I've already got my eye on the spot.
Wow, okay, so you're gonna have to somehow coax that out of him at some point. Anyone you want to thank, you know, for all your years of bodyboarding, or you just,
well,
I always give people the chance to say something.
I've got to thank Carol at home, because I mean, we've been together best part of 15 years, and she has to put up with wetsuits in the bathroom, or hanging in the passageway, sand in the bath, seaweed on the pillows.
Oh yeah.
Sitting down the beach on cold days, and at every single family event, kind of having to work around Jersey's tides.
Wow.
So yeah, big thanks to Carol. She's always there to support me.
That's love.
Yeah.
That's what they do. That's what you do for each other. Well, a pleasure to talk with you today, Colin.
A pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, my pleasure getting to sit down with Colin Crowther, one of the kind of the pioneers of bodyboarding over there in the UK, particularly in Jersey. And I was like, I gotta talk to this guy. One last question: who were your main bodyboarding influences as a youngster? Probably the same as mine.
Yeah, I would definitely say. Everyone's gonna say Mike Stewart. But I also had guys like Haoli Reeves and Seamus Mercado, Your Good Self.
Oh.
I used to drop knee quite a lot.
Okay.
In fact, I dropped knee quite a lot. I used to do it very, very regularly. But then as the shapes of boards progressed,
yes,
my boards become smaller and smaller and thinner, and then I found drop knee really difficult. And now as I got older, my balls are getting bigger and bigger again, and I started dropping again.
Going back to old school, yeah.
Yeah, that whole crew, Kitazaki, and I obsessed. I looked at the magazines, I looked at every fine detail, I looked at the videos, the contests, and even today, sometimes I put a bike on the turbo trainer to do some exercise, and I pull like a 1980s or 90s bodyboard video and just watch them again.
I love it, man. So good. So, folks, that is the life and times of Colin Crowther. So glad to have you here. And, folks, hope you enjoyed this episode of The Real Deal Show. If you watch on YouTube, subscribe to our channel. Give it the thumbs up. Put some comments down there for Colin. I'll forward those to him if you send any questions you might have. And if you listen on the audio podcast, hope you enjoy your workout, drive, or whatever it is that you do when you listen to podcasts. So I'm going to say over and out from here in Costa Rica for Colin Crowther and myself, Jay Real. We'll see you in the surf.